This is Mr. Tolu Balogun. On the Work From Home podcast, I will be teaching you a lot of things you can do to upgrade your skills and be able to run a work from home business successfully. Stay with me and enjoy. Hi everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Work From Home podcast. I have Michael here with me and we'll be talking about a lot of interesting stuff, especially how to manage virtual meetings, how to manage online meetings. We know we are in the era where you probably have a couple Zoom meetings per day. How do you manage interaction in those type of settings? How do you make sure that you don't offend or get offended or whatever the case might be in those type of meetings? What are the steps to make sure that you rock those online meetings? That's perfectly well. So, Michael, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for the warm invitation to participate and talk to your listeners. So my background is pretty much extensively in conflict resolution and collaboration building. I tended to do some teaching on that late in my career, and that teaching was all around the themes of when people are not working well together, how on earth do you get them to stop doing that and behave in a way that and fosters cooperation and collaboration. And maybe about 10 years ago, my students in my classes started asking me then about how do you do this work online? So we had extensive interactions in person, and we'd worked out ways to make that successful. But it was a new question to me about, well, how do you do this online? So I started thinking about it, writing about it, teaching about it. And it ended up in the book I shared with you about how to master online meetings. So it's been an evolution of kind of figuring out how do you get people to work well together and then transforming from in-person settings to online settings. So that's kind of been my evolution.
All right, great. Thank you, Michael, for taking us through that journey with you. A good first question that I would like to ask in this case is, when it comes to online meetings, what are some things that could possibly go wrong?
Just you name it. There's a lot that can go wrong. I think the first, let's reframe that question, if you don't mind, into what do my students fear most about it? So I think one of the biggest fears they have about it is that when they're talking to potential clients or people they're interacting with in person, they have a lot more material to work with because it's an interpersonal conversation. So you're close, you can read body language, you can see expressions a lot easier, you can measure tone of voice, you can do all of those sorts of scopings to get a sense about, is this conversation going well or not? So I think one of the biggest fears my students have is that in this medium where, like, you and I are participating in now, so you and I are on a video for this part.
Yes.
It's helpful, but it's flat. And so you don't have that ability to sort of read your audience. So that's one of the biggest fears. Another thing that can go wrong, or that's a big fear that they have, is that it's hard to reverse and rewind the conversation in this setting. Now, I can do it, but it looks, again, a bit artificial. In an in-person setting, you can get up close and personal to people and say, well, wait a minute, that's not quite what I said. But people have performance anxiety in this setting, and so because it's got this medium of a screen and a microphone and a camera and all of that sort of wherewithal, that they think they're on stage or they're on TV or they're in a movie and they got to be perfect somehow. So turning loose of the perfection bug, I think, is another big, I don't know if it's a fear they have, but it's another resistance or a hesitance that they have. Flipping over to your side of the question about, well, what can go wrong? There's all kinds of technology problems, and we know about that. Fortunately, we've all been in online meetings enough that there's a lot of forgiveness about that, and people kind of accept that. My advice to students is the best antidote for that is actually a prevention. So if this were, say, a job interview with you, what I would do is begin saying, well, we're on this online environment, and a lot of things can go wrong. Here's what I propose to do if we get disconnected, or if the sound goes bad, or if we think the interview is maybe going off track. let's just be transparent and talk about that. So making it a very human connection that way, saying things can go wrong, let's embrace that and be transparent and make it part of what we role model to the people who are in front of us as a way to work through those kinds of issues. So I think technology snafus are big on people's minds. Last observation I'll make is my students are fearful that they're committed once they say something online. It somehow is being recorded or it's being permanent, made permanent. And again, I try to normalize that using a term from my mediation experience. And you just normalize it and say, it's okay to rewind your conversation and restate things because we all have sometimes articulating what our thoughts are. So make it plain and transparent to your host that it's going to be perhaps necessary to reverse the conversation and restate something so it's clear, it's legible, it's friendly, it's understandable to the people on the other side of the microphone. So those are some thoughts that come to mind when you ask that thoughtful question.
Thank you very much for taking the time to give us a well-rounded answer. When it comes to the aspects of being authentic, when it comes to online meetings, you already talked about people trying to put up a face or trying to be like they feel like they're acting or they're on stage and all those sort of stuff. And, well, I mean, in terms of authenticity, what would your reaction be?
So another great question. I think the entry point is to, again, normalize that this is not a normal environment for being that. Show people orally and through maybe some body language that you're really working hard to try to be authentic and be communicative. And I think maybe being communicative is the way to be authentic. Prove that you're trying to do that. Now, there's some verbal things you can do for that. You can be authentic by saying that you care and you have concern about what's going on for the person you're talking to. You can be inquisitive. I think asking questions is a very, very powerful thing to do in any environment, including online. So there's that old cliche that I believe in, that the first thing you want to do is understand what the other party is before you start talking, to try to be understood by them. So asking questions, I think, is a way to show your authenticity and getting good about that. Let me take a sidestep here and talk about, well, what kind of question might work for that? And there's always the classic the classic advice that it's good to ask open-ended questions. Again, if this was a job interview with you, I would probably ask you a question that's open-ended, saying something like, well, tell me what I need to understand to be helpful to your organization. And that gets you talking. That's a big, fat, open-ended invitation to tell me what's going on for you, what are your problems, what are the needs that you have. So asking those kinds of open-ended questions is really, really helpful. Here is a specific question that you and your listeners can use that I use all the time, and it has a positive impact every time I use it. And so it's worth jotting this question down. The favorite question I have for an open-ended question like that is, what is it you most want me to understand about what's going on for you or your organization? And that question seems to work really well all the time. So expressing authenticity through questions is another thing to do. A third thing you can do to show authenticity is use some body language. You know, people, I'll do a little role modeling here. People tend to clam up and freeze up if there's an online environment includes a camera. So you sit here and you talk wooden and your voice comes down and you get into a monotone and you're sitting here and not very much expression. Now I'm gonna move my eyes to watch you on the camera instead of watching the camera. So being mindful that you are in a medium that has a camera. And so you want to play to that camera and don't be an actor and don't try to overdo it. But bear in mind that if the camera lens is the face of your audience, not the screen image that I'm looking at. So you want to play to the camera and you want to make eye contact with it. That shows authenticity. And you want to use gestures that are appropriate. And so camera field of view is narrow. So I'm using my hands and I'm not staging them as normally the way I talk, but in person my hands are way out here. Now you can't see them moving around. I'm mindful that the camera's field of view is more narrow, So if I want to express authenticity using hand gestures or whatever, I've got to bear in mind that that's a little trick that I learned from a friend that's helpful, is most camera images are reversed for people. So if I want to say I want to project something that had a before and after effect, in Western cultures anyway, we read from left to right. And so if I do that on camera, this is my left hand, and I say before this happened and then after this happened, that's moving in the opposite direction for people on the other side of the camera. So you got to bear in mind that it's opposite. So if I want to say something that has a countdown or before and after effect, then you want to be mindful that you're going to use your right hand instead, which is on their left, to say first, second, third, something like that. So you can do some little tricks like
that. Awesome stuff. Thank you very much. And especially on the camera tip, thank you for giving us that too. And then giving us ideas on open-ended questions. That is a very, very, very smart way to do things. Now, I would also want you to discuss with us, what are some ways that we can do or use to carry some of the important lessons? I know you've started highlighting some of them. Some important lessons that we need to take from the face-to-face meetings into the online and virtual meetings.
And you'd like some more tips about how to do that? Is that correct?
Yes, some more tips. You know, you already talked about looking into the camera for eye contact, mm-hmm. and then understanding that when you are analyzing things, you should understand that the image is mirrored.
Yeah. Okay, let me give you some ideas that I use that hopefully your listeners will find helpful. One is that it's really the art of interviewing people. And so we talked about open-ended questions, and my favorite question is, what is it you most want me to understand? I think it's helpful to realize that people, so let's set up a situation. So the situation is that you're trying to sell your services or convince somebody on the other side of the screen. I work with government employees a lot, and they're not selling things, but they're purveying or selling ideas to people. So it is a persuasive business. So bear in mind that there's a series of tips about how to be persuasive in any conversation, including online conversations. So an entry point could be read some books and, you know, do the usual kinds of self-study about how do you be persuasive. But here are some routine things that I teach and that I use, especially in a client interview, about being persuasive in this environment. One is to realize that people have our brains are hardwired to be fearful of losing things. So people who have studied human decision-making behavior have discovered that we as people have a fear of losing something that is more powerful than is our evaluation of how much gain or how much reward we might get from it. And so the big name they give that is, it's called loss aversion bias. Which means people entering into a conversation, they don't know about it, they're not thinking about it consciously, but their biggest concern is the fear of losing something. So if you want to be a tip that is in the arena of being persuasive, is you want to just make that assumption that the people you're talking with are listening with a bias, and that listening is, what could I lose by interacting with me, with Michael, for example? And they're not being bad people. They're not there in bad faith. It's not anything, you know, sinister like that. It's just the way our brains behave. And so what you want to do is give them some assurance and give them something I and people who study negotiations call a golden bridge. A golden bridge from where they are today about fear. They want to cross that bridge with your help to someplace where they feel safe. And so there's a tip I teach all the time and I use, and that's another cliche that I developed to express what has got to happen to make people cross that golden bridge. And it's got to provide, you need to provide people with a solution that, here's the cliche, provide them a solution that is good enough for now and safe enough to try. Now, another bias we have, it's a bias we have, is people listen for an answer that will provide them with perfection. So they have a fear of loss, and they're looking for an answer that gives them perfection. So if you think that the challenge is in being persuasive is to get them to think, the answer Michael is providing is good enough for now, and I feel safe trying it. So you can get them to cross that bridge. Well, how do you make it good enough? Well, you give them opportunities for backtracking on their decision later in the process if it's not working out. So it's good enough, it may not be perfect in their mind, but it's good enough for now because Mike has offered me some sort of assurance or guarantee that if we get into the project, for example, we're going to have checkpoints and we're going to retool and revisit the decisions and modify them so they keep getting better over time. That automatically provides a safe enough decision for them to try because Mike's provided me some sort of assurance that we can retrofit or retool the idea or the work that we're doing to make it safe. Of course, you can provide guarantees, but as a person who sells their services, I'm always a little reluctant to do that, and I suspect your listeners might be as well, because it's kind of tough for you to predict what might go wrong. So you both are in the same boat of trying to make it good enough for now and make it safe enough. And the antidote that I find most successful is, well, sure, we're going to encounter things we didn't expect and mistakes will happen, but that's not going to kill our working effort together. Let's just commit to one another that as the project moves forward, we're going to revisit and revise the project as it goes forward. So those are some ideas about how some more tips, but in the context of how do you be persuasive to get somebody to say yes to your course of action that you've proposed.
Wow, great stuff there. I know we've dwelt much on the human part of things. Now let's talk a little bit more about the software part of things or the technology part of things. What are some tools that you would naturally suggest for people to consider using when they are looking at making sure that their online meetings go according to plan?
Okay, well, good questions. takes us into the arena of you being the manager of the meeting, which is a leadership position you should try to move yourself into. Think before, think during, and think after. And so before the meeting or before the conversation gets going, really huge fan of having a conversation that is a pre-meeting before the meeting. And what that pre-meeting covers is what's all the things you need to know so that when you get into the actual meeting, you have designed it in a way that works for you. And for me, that's all about a client intake interview. So I do something, I try to make it online, impersonal, like a Zoom call or a Skype call or something like that. And there's no recording, it's just me interviewing the client, saying, what do you want to achieve? How are we going to achieve it? What's your struggles that you and your colleagues are dealing with now? It's that intake set of questions for me to get grounded on what they need to achieve. Because a worst outcome is to get into the meeting and realize you predicted incorrectly what the purpose is for the meeting. So you want to get clear. So this pre-meeting, I call it an intake interview, is very important. Sometimes I have to do that online through email, off camera, through email or some venue like that, a chat or something. But I try to make it personal because the conversation is richer. So have a pre-meeting called an intake interview and make that a discovery process of what needs to happen. Now, after that's done, you don't just open the door to a meeting, open the Zoom meeting and start talking. You're going to have as much time as you can carve out to design that meeting. So you want a design going in. And usually, showing leadership in those meetings, the design function for me contains a warm-up. So we're in the meeting now and I'm leading it. Contains a warm-up. You could use an icebreaker, but mostly I just talk to people about why we're there, what we want to purpose, what purpose we want to achieve. And here's a key term that I use in my thinking and with the audience is at the very front of the meeting, as I tell them what the deliverable is for the meeting. It's so common that people just throw a meeting together and they open the Zoom door and they say, we're here to talk about subject X, and then they name the subject. It's much, much more powerful and you have much more control to say, we're here to talk about subject X, and to fulfill that need, the product we want to generate by the end of the conversation or the deliverable for today's meeting is, and then you name it. It's a decision, it's a negotiated solution, it's a list of items, it's a prioritization of a project, it's a budget allocation, it's some sort of named product like that that you want to create. And then you design the rest of your meeting around how to generate that product. And that's all the usual meeting management techniques of like brainstorming and winnowing and refining and clarifying and voting, making a decision or negotiating a solution back and forth. So that's the before you do an intake interview, that's the during. Be clear on the deliverable and design a process to get it. And now the third step is the after. And that's where you design an exit from your meeting that not only encourages, but tries to seal concrete actions by everybody when the meeting is over with. And so that's negotiating at the end of the meeting commitments that people should follow through on. And for me as a provider of services, that's usually an offer. Let me write this up as a proposal and send it to you, or let me capture the set of notes where you guys have negotiated this agreement, and I'll put the points of agreement down and we'll pass that on as a set of written notes about your agreement or something like that. For the clients or the people I'm facilitating the meeting for, it's usually a set of action steps like Harry is going to devise a budget for this. Jane is going to conceive what a set of work steps are for this. So it's a set of action steps like that. So you're tending to the after meeting needs for follow-up commitments from people. So that's a normal meeting design. Before process, intake interview, during the meeting, it's getting clear on the deliverable and designing something to generate it, and then commitments about how you're going to implement that deliverable when the meeting is over with.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so all what you have said is definitely well thought out, well planned and everything. So what are some tools that I have to use to make sure I don't go off track or help me remember that, okay, this is what I've done, this is what I need to do next?
Okay, good. So there's meetings usually inside the meeting platform. So let's use Zoom, for example, because that's what I use the most. And they, of course, have recordings, so you can do it by recording. Sometimes people are a little sensitive about that because they don't want to be held to misspeak and, you know, that kind of thing. But recording is a good time. A tool that I think is it's simultaneously overused and underused is the chat function in these tools. It's overused in the sense that people use it for trivial purposes. Well, would you put into the chat what you're feeling today, or what's your favorite animal, or, you know, those kinds of sort of questions simply to get people interacting in some way, but the interactions don't have a real purpose. So it's overused in that sense. But the chat tool is actually quite powerful and quite helpful. And so I try to use the chat a lot, but with purpose. And those purposes are things like, give me specific ideas. We've talked, for example, we have talked about this little problem area in your workflow. Would you please put into the chat a brainstorm of specific solutions we can consider? So instead of a chat that's about what your favorite feeling is for the day or what your mood is or that kind of thing, it's a chat with a specific purpose to give me specific ideas to solve a specific problem. Now, another underused function for chat that is, you have to have your wits about yourself a bit as a facilitator, but another underused function is you use the chat for a voting tool. And so if I have had a success with a group saying, we have three options that you have developed that are sort of in competition with one another, it's now the time to get a sense of which of these options are most valuable to you. And I'm going to number them, option one, option two, and option three. Would you please go to the chat and put in a number that represents your vote for the option you think is most important? It could be option A, B, and C. Let's use that. It's a little clearer. So if you like option A, just write the letter A into the chat. If you like option B, just write option B into the chat. And all of a sudden, you've got a quick, effective polling tool that you can use the chat for. So the chat function is an underutilized tool. They have polls in these platforms, but typically a poll needs to be constructed ahead of time before the meeting. So if you're in a meeting, it's really hard to construct those and use them at the same time. So the utility is a bit limited. If I have a producer that's helping me, and that's another tool that you can use, is hire somebody to produce the meeting and knows the technology. And that producer, I typically hire people who know my work, so they don't just know the Zoom platform. They also know about mediations, which I do, or they also know about facilitations, which I do. And so offline, the producer usually has some slack time. And so I can say, a favorite producer I use, her name is Lucia. I'll say, Lucia, would you please construct a quick poll in a third-party tool? So we'll use a tool like Padlet.com, which is very good. A number of polling tools. Microsoft has a polling tool. There's SurveyMonkey. There's a variety of those. I'll say, would you please go to, SurveyMonkey and create a quick survey of the six options that we've got here. And we'll come back to that in 20 minutes and we'll do a little voting exercise on that. So using third-party tools that you can drop into the chat, but you need a good producer to help you make those things work as well. There's a variety of tools that you can use to get people to do brainstorming. Incredibly common activity in meetings is to do brainstorm. I've mentioned Padlet. They have free accounts there. It's a routine go-to tool for me. But also, I'll just use a suite of Google tools. So Google Drive has a suite of tools that are free and actually quite robust, and you can use them. So you have Google Docs. So I'll drop a link in the chat to a Google Doc and have my participants visit the Google Doc and write a narrative that's a response to a question that I posed, or write in bullet items that are a brainstorm on a solution, or to write responses to one another's comments, that kind of thing. So you can do a lot Google Drives using something as simple as Google Docs or something more sophisticated like a Google Forms, which is their survey making tool. So those are some tools that I use. I'll end by saying that I'm a big fan of, if you are running these meetings and you have enough bandwidth with the client to do it, of having, I've used this term before in our conversation, is having a meeting before the meeting. So the client says, Mike, would you run a meeting for me? If I can, I'll try to create, and here comes some big talk or big word talk for your audience, of using an asynchronous tool and the synchronous Zoom tool. And an asynchronous tool is a website you create that's not hard to do, where people can visit that on their own time and they're on their own schedule and complete a exercise for me. So that's usually a survey or an information gathering tool. So the meeting before the meeting is actually designing and implementing an asynchronous activity with the audience to get them to write down their thoughts before we get to the synchronous meeting, which is the Zoom tool or the online meeting management software that you're using. So you're taking two activities of a meeting and you're breaking them up into something that occurs asynchronously before the Zoom meeting and then during the Zoom meeting. That's really helpful. The most common asynchronous tool I use, and it's somewhat elaborate but incredibly powerful, is to build a blog discussion. I work with scientists a lot, and so these people are deep thinkers and they like to talk. I mean, you get them talking about a specific subject, like I facilitated a series of meetings with some scientists about how to manage rabies in the United States, which is an issue because it's a big problem. It's not a growing problem, fortunately, but it is a serious problem. And so a lot of scientists with deep technical knowledge came together to talk about that. And I knew they would spend hours talking about all the small details of rabies management and how it moves through populations and those kinds of questions. So we developed a blog discussion asynchronously, and they had all that conversation in writing by typing. And it was rich, it was rewarding, it was deep, it was incredibly informative. And then I had two of the most prominent scientists that were respected to read all those blog posts and synthesize the lessons learned. So instead of taking that whole discussion into the live meeting online, we took the synthesis in from two respected scientists that everybody liked, and we worked from their synthesis of the lessons learned. That was an incredibly powerful technique for using the advantages that technology can bring us today. And I might say these scientists were spread all over the world, which is another huge advantage of these online tools that we're using. So hopefully that's an example to illustrate the power of the tools we have in front of us.
I'm sure that all our listeners here today cannot say that they've not learned a lot of valuable stuff from our conversations today. And we really appreciate you, Michael, for, you know, creating the time out of your schedule to come be with us and give us some valuable tips and insights. I personally have learned a lot, and I'm sure the listeners have learned a lot too. So quick, before we go, can you tell the listeners the best way to reach out to you? I know you also have a free coaching session that they can take advantage of.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for that invitation. People can see my work by looking at the website, all one word, masteringonlinemeetings.com. And there's a variety of material there that people can access about me and about the work that I do. And there's some free resources there too that hopefully that might help them. The free offer I have for folks is a free one-hour coaching session. And so if you go to the website, the top bar menu has a free offer for the coaching session. So you can just click on that and click on through to signing up for that. The part of the offer that I make for folks is that when you engage me for the free coaching session, it's going to be just a coaching session. I won't trap you into a marketing conversation about that. It'll be just you and me talking about what your needs are, and doing some brainstorming and how you might craft some solutions to find your way out of whatever issue that you might have. Or maybe you just have an inquiry. You want to find out about, you have a how-to question. How do you do something? The free coaching offer is there for that as well. So take advantage of the free coaching offer with my promise that I won't trap you into a marketing pitch on when you do that.
Thank you so much. So listeners, you have it there in the show notes. There'll be links to all of the resources that you need, including the free coaching. That is a very generous offer, Michael. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're welcome. See you next week, listeners. Have a very great week ahead. Don't forget to share this with your friends and, I mean, anybody in your circle that you know will find this information very valuable. Have a great week, guys. Bye.